In recent years, electronic cigarettes, or e-cigs, have seen an explosion in popularity. Initially created as a smoking cessation aid, they've now become a popular consumer product, and a whole vaping industry is springing up across the U.S. to meet that growing demand.
Despite being marketed as a safer alternative to traditional cigarettes, there have been concerns over the safety of the products, especially as more young people turn to them. Now, a new investigation by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel looks at what's in e-cigarette liquid, or smoke juice, as some call it, finds that there might be more harmful chemicals in these liquids than what industry testing has suggested.
Joining us now is Raquel Rutledge. She's a reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Raquel, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for your interest in the story.
So let's talk generally first about e-cigarettes for a moment. Now, it seems as though usage has been surging in recent years. Lots of vaping shops popping up around cities. How big of a growth rate have we been seeing here?
Well, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention does a youth survey analysis of tobacco use, and they have seen the numbers triple in the last, from 2013 to 2014, of folks who have tried e-cigarettes. Now, and we did our own survey of Marquette University students just to sort of gauge, you know, is it getting on the college campuses? What are their perspectives on it? And we found that more college students had tried an e-cigarette than had tried a conventional tobacco cigarette. So there is a lot of interest in it. It is being marketed as something as somewhat safer, and some are marketing it that way. And, you know, it's very attractive with all these different, you know, cheesecake flavors and cherries and bubble gum and cotton candy type flavors. So it is attracting youth for sure.
Now, the whole flavor profile that you just described there relies on liquid, or another nickname for that is smoke juice. Tell us a little bit about what these e-liquids are and how they work.
Well, they are typically a base of either vegetable glycerin or propylene glycol, and they are then typically mixed with, different levels of nicotine. Not always. You can get them, you know, the goal, I think, for some folks is to get, you know, wean off the nicotine and not have any nicotine in there. But you can buy nicotine in different levels. And then more often than not, added with a flavor. So you can get, there are thousands of flavors out there to choose from.
And tell us about the ones that you chose to test for your investigation.
We randomly selected some around just locally made around Milwaukee, because there have been studies out there. Last year there was a study done by a cardiologist in Greece who is very interested in e-cigarettes, and he studied 159 different flavors from 30 something manufacturers in 7 different countries. So he did kind of a wide look, mostly at sweet flavored ones though. So he did focus on the sweet flavored ones, because those are the ones that are typically known to have diacetyl and 2,3-pentanedione, which are the compounds that we're talking about here. And so we wanted to sort of get an idea on what's going on locally. How are these things being made? Because a lot of folks will make them right in their shop, in their vape shops right there in the back of the store, or sometimes right out in the front. Or they have another lab do it for them. So we just wanted to see what was going on in the local markets. And so we just picked 5 flavors that the store clerk said were popular. We just said, hey, show us your best-selling stuff. And they picked these 5 flavors, and we tested them for those 2 compounds.
So you've got those 2 chemicals, and we'll come back to them, and the other ones as well. Now, but the 2 that we're talking about, diacetyl and the other one that I'm going to let you pronounce, there's questions about the levels of what's in those. So tell us again what they are and what the concerns are.
Well, diacetyl has been studied more than 2,3-pentanedione, and 2,3-pentanedione is a chemical cousin. It's one molecule different than diacetyl, and they're both used widely in the food industry for their ability to impart a butter flavor. They are used for microwave popcorn. They are used in candies and baking, and they actually are formed naturally. They're a byproduct from fermentation, and so they've given the sort of green light that the FDA has, to say you can eat this in trace amounts. They have not been studied for inhalation. Nobody has endorsed them to say it's okay to inhale them. So it's very different. And diacetyl was first came got a lot of attention back in the early 2000s when the microwave popcorn workers started coming down with this illness called bronchiolitis obliterans, which is essentially when your bronchioles get obliterated by diacetyl. It attacks those tiniest airways, the small airways, and as your body tries to heal, it builds up scar tissue, and it's irreversible. So that's what diacetyl has been known for, that over the years, and studies on animals and epidemiological studies on workers have been done. Now, 2,3-pentanedione has been used as a replacement. As the food manufacturers started to steer away from diacetyl, there's been a ton of litigation. Multi-million-dollar lawsuits have been settled. So manufacturers are moving away from diacetyl, and they've been using 2,3-pentanedione as a substitute. Well, animal studies have now shown, and because they are so close, their chemical structure, the toxicology studies are coming back saying, hey, these are equally, the 2,3-pentanedione is equally as destructive to the lungs.
We're talking to Raquel Rutledge right now of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, talking about their recent investigation revealing that popular e-cigarette liquids contain harmful chemicals, often without buyers and sellers being aware of it. So, Raquel, you've got these five different flavors, these e-liquids that you're testing for these two particular chemicals, diacetyl and 2,3-pentanedione. So where did you take them to be tested?
We started out having them tested at Marquette University, their chemistry department. The chair of the department, Scott Reed, offered to do that for us and take a look at what was in them. And so he did that, and he used a very sensitive method of testing. He derivatized these compounds, which essentially you mix them with another compound to make bigger and easier to capture. So he did that. Then he put them through a mass spectrometry machine. And was able to detect both of those chemicals in all of the samples that we gave him. And then we wanted to also send them to another lab, which does a lot of the testing for the e-liquid industry, and that is a lab out in North Carolina called Enthalpy Labs. And they do, like I said, a bulk of the testing across the country and for Canada as well. And we only sent three. We sent our three highest ones to them. The ones that were we thought, wow, these are the highest ones. Let's see what they say. So we did send it to them. And what is standard in their industry, what their folks told us, is that they don't detect as low of a level because, not that they can't, they're certainly capable of detecting lower levels. But the process that Marquette used takes a little bit longer. It takes 6 hours to derivatize. It's a little more expensive, a little more time-consuming, labor-intensive. So they don't do that. The industry has not asked them to do that. So they're basically responding to what their clients want, which is, we want to know, you know, how much is in there at parts per million. So they don't typically go down into the lower level. So when they have a non-detect, that doesn't mean there is no diacetyl or 2,3-pentanedione in there. If you're an e-liquid maker and you send it to Enthalpy and say, hey, you know, do we have diacetyl? Do we have a problem here? If you don't specifically tell them, you know, there has to be a will to want to detect lower levels. And they don't, for the most part. They leave it at parts per million. And that is, it's a long explanation. I don't know if you want me to get into why they do that, but I certainly can if you're interested. I can get way in the weeds on this stuff.
Well, let's look at some of the bigger picture questions first, and we'll see if we end up there eventually. But so you've got these e-cigarettes, you're finding elements of these chemicals in them. Is the expectation already going in, at least to consumers and to sellers, that these products are free of these chemicals? Does it say anything like that on the packaging?
There are times when it does say they are diacetyl free or 2,3-pentanedione free, and when we have found that they're not, that does happen. It doesn't always. I don't know what the expectation is. I think there's a lot of misinformation and a lot of just lack of information. Some folks have never heard those words. Some vapors, there's folks that are even heavy vapors, haven't even heard of them, are not asking about it, aren't concerned about it, don't know about it. Others are, and there were some cases where I think the expectation was that it was diacetyl-free because they would say, some of the labels used to say FDA approved. They would have a label on it that said FDA approved, for generally recognized as safe. And there have been letters the flavor manufacturing industry wrote cease and desist letters and told them to stop marketing it that way because they've only been approved for ingestion, for eating, not inhalation.
So is anybody regulating these chemicals in specifically e-cigarettes?
No.
So no one's regulating them. So it's up to who to enforce the chemicals, just the sellers themselves?
Yeah, nobody is. Nobody. I mean, there are some trade associations that are cropping up, certainly in the United States and in Canada, where they are trying to set standards because they're realizing as an industry that this is an issue. And so they're trying to come up with testing standards. In Canada, they have a trade association that requires all the members, and they've got about 50 members, that requires them to test every 6 months and test for a number of chemicals, including the two that we were talking about. And but they also don't require the lower level of detection, so they're sticking with their parts per million and saying that's our cutoff.
So one of these that you discovered, and there were chemicals found in many of them, but that there was a top one that you write about, where the Marquette lab did turn up pretty high amounts of the diacetyl chemical. How significant was that number when you talked to the labs?
It is the way we did our calculations. You know, we did micrograms per milliliter, and most vapors, again, the studies vary from what is an average vape per day, you know, between 3 milliliters, some studies say 5 milliliters. But we found, I think, I don't have it in front of me, but it's roughly more than 80 micrograms per gram, which is essentially almost per milliliter, in one unit. So imagine if you do three of those. So it's higher concentrations, but the problem with this whole thing is that there is no safe level that anyone can agree and say this is safe. There isn't. Like there only is a framework of risk management, which is, you know, which compares it to the occupational exposure that workers will face when they spend their 8-hour days in there, and that's been a source of contention for folks who are looking at this and trying to determine how safe or not safe it is.
Raquel Rutledge is with us right now from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, talking about a recent investigation by the paper that reveals that popular e-cigarette liquids contain harmful chemicals, a lot of the time without buyers or sellers being aware that they're there.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Are you an e-cigarette user or seller? If so, are you concerned about the liquid needed for the products or not something that worries you? Do you think we need more regulation of e-cigarettes and the products that go into them? Call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking right now with Raquel Rutledge of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. A recent investigation by the paper finds that popular e-cigarette liquids contain harmful chemicals. That's got some calling for stricter testing in the industry.
And you can join us at 800-642-1234. If you're an e-cigarette user, why? And do you have concerns over what might be in the liquid, or is it not something that you're especially worried about? And what do you think? Does the vaping industry need stricter testing standards or not? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. And we go to Jason, who is joining us in Marshfield. Jason, hi.
Yeah, I've been listening to the conversation. I guess my concern is, you know, I hear the guests talk about how scientists have said and studies have shown, like the European scientists who did sampled 136 samples over six countries, lawsuits, litigation, and pentanyl and pentane and diaxyl and all this stuff. And in high school, we learned that to be tech talk. I'm wondering about the sources of all these studies, because it sounds pretty convincing that e-cigarettes are bad, but it's like getting it from a neighbor. Where's the source? Thank you.
Jason, hi. And Raquel, maybe a little bit about some of the European testing, if you're familiar with that. And then maybe we can talk a little bit about the Marquette study and the North Carolina lab again that you used.
Sure. Well, the sources of the information about diacetyl being a danger and 2,3-pentanedione being dangerous are done by NIOSH, which is the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And they've got dozens of those studies that are done by them. So those are government scientists that have been doing those studies over the last 15 years or so to establish that diacetyl is a danger. And then more recently, the National Institutes of Health has done the 2,3-pentanedione stuff. So that's the source for those things. The folks in Greece, like I said, it's a cardiologist who teamed up with the folks from Enthalpy Labs to do the analysis on the e-liquids. And those studies are published. They're in Tobacco Control. They're in I've got them cited in my stories on where they're, like, who published these studies. They're peer-reviewed journals. They're not, you know, it isn't from your neighbor. These are, you know, credible journals that have been around that are publishing these studies.
And by the way, we've got that article up on the Central Time Facebook page. So, Jason, you're welcome to look there and read more about the investigation for yourself. Jason, thank you so much for that call. We're going to go next to Mark joining us in Stoughton. Mark, hi.
How you doing?
Good, thanks.
You know, my boy, he's 33 years old, and he smokes one of them vapors. And I'm just wondering what's worse, them or cigarettes. Have they proved that? Anything on that yet?
All right, probably a lot of people wondering that. Mark, what do we know about how e-cigarettes compare to traditional cigarettes, Raquel?
Yeah, that is a great question. And the doctors, pulmonologists, scientists will debate that widely. So there, the facts are nobody actually knows. I mean, you can talk about e-cigarettes having far fewer carcinogens in them because they're just far fewer compounds than combustible tobacco. But then you also have other scientists saying, yes, but the vapors are deposited deeper into your lungs, into an area that's more susceptible to injury. And so, gosh, nobody actually has a truthful answer that, you know, there are studies on both sides that say, you know, I talked to a pulmonologist this afternoon. He said, I would never encourage someone to switch to e-cigarettes as a way to get off of conventional cigarettes. Other folks I've certainly talked to, Konstantinos Varsalinos is the guy who did the studies in Greece, and he absolutely advocates for, you know, switching over. So I cannot answer that question. I don't think anybody actually can until, you know, 15 years down the road.
Right. So it seems like we're sort of in the early days of the science on e-cigarettes, and it could be regulation will come into the picture. But Raquel, as we wrap up, what is the best thing for e-cigarette users to know and be thinking about as they make this choice about whether or not to use them?
Well, buyer beware is what the FDA folks say, who are still working on trying to regulate them. So in the interim here, until if and when they actually do follow through with some of the proposals they've got out there to enforce some regulations, you're on your own to kind of, there is no way to be assured. You can ask folks to test them. If you're buying from a local vape shop, you can say, hey, do you test your liquids? How sensitive are your tests? Can I see the results of those tests? And those are only for the known compounds. I got to tell you, there's, you know, close to a dozen other compounds in there that are known to be respiratory, health risks. And so we haven't even dealt with those yet. So they're risky.
Raquel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Raquel Rutledge is a reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She joined us to talk about her investigation into the harmful chemicals often found in e-cigarette liquids.